Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Cholentani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, everybody. You are listening to episode 84, Who Grew Your Food with Benji Balmer. This is such an amazing and local episode for Ohio, but the knowledge and the wisdom and honestly, the inspiration of this episode is worldwide and timeless. Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to remind you guys that Witchy Wellness Radio is sponsored by Living the Good Life Naturally Magnesium. I've had their founder, Kristen Bowen, on our podcast, episode 73, that's 73, and we talk about all the beautiful benefits, mind, body, and soul. But if you're interested in learning more, listen to that episode, but also head over to their website using the link below to purchase magnesium for yourself. And make sure to use code WICHY, W-I-C-T-H-Y, to get 10% off your cart. Now back to today's show, Benji and I talk about so many things from food, the food system, to the educational system, to the evolution of humanity and how you do everything is how you do anything. But first and foremost, we talk about how and why Benji and his wife began their beautiful company, Yellow Bird Food Shed. What does decentralizing the food system actually mean? Do you know who really grew your food? And is this a time of extinction or evolution for humanity? Paving your own path outside of the system of life or any system of society. The educational system, what are we really producing out of all of this? And what do you actually get in a weekly food share from Yellow Bird? And so much more. I am so excited to present this episode to you guys, and I can't wait, pun intended, for you to sink your teeth or maybe headphones into this episode. Please enjoy episode 84, Who Grew Your Food with Benji Balmer. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. This is your host, Lauren, and this is a show you get to learn your body is not in the way, but actually leading your way. And today we have the founder of Yellow Bird Food Shed, a local Columbus, beautiful CSA company, Benji Balmer here. And he works with over 100 food growers and producers from Ohio, and their community has eaters that cast their vote with each bite of their fork. Each product that they eat has been sustainably raised, harvested, transported, and consumed. And the members are constantly striving to create solutions to help restore one of the planet's most fundamental and yet corrupted systems, food. By asking ourselves and our customers, who grew your food? They partner with both the growers and the consumers to create a sustainable model that decentralizes the current food system. Wow, that is no small feat. Cool. I know we're going to talk all about that. And off air, we were talking about breathwork and HRV. So I know this is going to be a great conversation. Welcome to the show, Benji.
Glad to be here. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are based in Ohio for everybody out there. We have listeners all over the world. And I know I went to school in Athens, Ohio, which also has a lot of like local food movement. And I think it was like the 30 mile meal or the 50 mile meal.
Yeah, 30.
Yep. 30. Yeah. And that was really, really cool to see that. And you guys started Yellow Bird. Oh my goodness. Was it? Let me take a guess. 2014? 13?
Yes, 14 was the first year that we were doing anything. 13, we were conceptualizing. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I would love to hear your story of how Yellow Bird came into fruition. I know this is a passion project. This is not just about the food. This is about, you know, changing the system and empowering people with each bite.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my oldest daughter is, she actually turned 15 this year. And when we had her, we began to think about what we were feeding her. You know, it becomes a lot less about you and a lot more about somebody else. And it started pretty simply with growing some food in our backyard. I got a few chickens. We lived in Findlay, Ohio at the time. And then I am curious by nature. And so if I start into something, it doesn't stop until, you know, if ever, until I've reached the bottom. And so I began to seek out a different form of milk. And we bought raw milk from a direct from a farm in Findlay. And then it went to bread. And my wife learned about sourdough. And we began to make our own bread. And of course, now, you know, 12, 15 years later, we're still making bread off of that same mother that started that whole thing. And then it eventually got to, you know, we went through pastured meat and pastured eggs and all these different things. Well, at some point, we were growing enough food and buying enough food directly from the farms that we began to look around and see things at restaurants that didn't quite add up, things at grocery stores that just didn't make sense. And we began to ask those questions and to find out and to see that, like many big systems over the course of time, politics, money, agendas, other big companies, profit, you know, homogeneous output on the Ford factory line, you know, that translates to everything. And when it does, it usually makes something very cheap and very easier to get. I always use a big screen TV as an example. I could sit here with you right now and on my phone, I could make two clicks. And by tomorrow at this time, I could have a 65-inch TV screen at my front door for a fairly reasonable price. It wouldn't be that hard to do. That's great for TVs that are huge and cheap and make it so that we can all have great entertainment through that medium. It doesn't work when you're talking about a head of lettuce, a living organism that is coming from Mother Earth. And in order to make that lettuce the best it can be in a sustainable way so that the earth can continue on with more than we're taking from her, there's a lot that goes into that. And it's not as simple as going to the grocery store and seeing it on the shelf for 98 cents and thinking that that is the actual cost of that food. All this became clear to us over many, many hours and days and years and, you know, all these different revelations that we had, starting by just growing just a little bit of our own food. But because we dove for the bottom and now we knew what was happening, we couldn't rest really until we, of course, we evangelized and we started to have friends that would say, well, hey, when you're going out to get eggs from such and such a farm, you know, will you grab me a dozen or three dozen or whatever it might be? When you're going out to get milk, you know, will you get milk for us too from this place, et cetera, et cetera? Well, you know, you start to arrange kind of some carpooling and, you know, this week we're going to get milk, next week you're going to get milk. Well, then we started keeping it in our garage. This is still in Findlay. And, you know, I looked at my wife one day when we bought like 20 chickens, you know, whole chickens for meat, you know, five of them for us and then 15 for other people. Like, well, we ought to look at doing this. Like, you know, this could be a business. I was kind of joking. But anytime I'm kind of joking, I'm also kind of telling the truth. Maybe we all are. But as we did it, we started growing more food at greater capacity. And I was working at Fresh Encounter at the time, which is this company out of Findlay who owns independent grocery stores. So think of like an IGA or, you know, your community markets, your little mom and pop shops. They own like 50 of those around Ohio. And they're based out of Findlay. Well, I convinced them to let me put up a 97-foot-long hoop house, which is like a greenhouse, essentially, that I could grow food in. And what we would do is we would involve the community, teach people how to garden. We would take that food inside the store and sell it on the shelves in the store that was right next door. We would do all these different things. Well, once I started doing that, I personally was growing food for seven people, all friends and family. I was teaching others how to do it. The University of Findlay was participating. We were out at some senior living residences and things like that, just networking and trying to get food to as many people as possible. And I started going to farmers markets. I started going to restaurants. And when I did, I would ask the people there, like the other growers, like, is this, you know, I've been standing here for 2 or 3 hours and I might've done $200 or $300 in sales. Well, you know, that's not factoring in the hour that I spent, you know, loading everything up, the hour I spent driving, the 2 hours there, the hour to break down, the 2 hours home. I spent a whole day and I made enough money to barely put gas in my tank. And I'm looking at everybody and I'm saying, is this what everybody is doing? Or is somebody killing it? And I just don't know the secret. And they, everybody pretty much to a T said, no, this is about it. And I just thought to myself, it's no wonder that we don't have a foothold in our small growers that are doing, I mean, they're going through the rigors to make sure that they're doing everything right and doing it naturally. They're not spraying anything, which takes more time, more money, more effort, all these different things. And I just thought there's got to be a better way. And so we began to brainstorm what a food hub would look like. You know, a central place where we could go out to the growers and to the people that were doing all these different things. I was buying and eating their food anyways, and I was also growing some food at the time. So we put it together and we realized, one, we got to be by a city. In this case, we chose Columbus. And two, we've got to make our home office, our headquarters, in the middle of the farms. You know, there's a lot of produce wholesalers in Columbus even, but they're all in Columbus. If you can't get to them, you can't get your food to them because they're built upon what the rest of the system is built upon, which is fast, cheap, easy. It's got to be there today. It's got to be always ready, which means they got to get it from all parts of the world. So you can factor in all the fuel, all the things that go with that. So we chose Mount Vernon, which is where we moved to in January of 2014. And I literally walked into a local food grocery store here in Mount Vernon, and there was maybe 20 business cards on the shelf. And I just boom, 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 just picked them all off and just started dialing. Hey, such and such from such and such farm. This is Benji. I've got a crazy idea, but I'm actually going to try to do it. Would you be interested in talking? Yes. Get lost. I mean, I got it all just as you would. And we just started going, and we had, you know, that first year, we delivered 16 weeks of the year. I was just me. I had a refrigerated Mercedes Sprinter van, and I did it all. I wrote the checks to the farms from the seat of the truck. I did the marketing. I did the networking. I drove into Columbus every day and met every person I thought that I needed to meet in Columbus that would, you know, help us figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to partner. I got the lay of the land, and over time, just the resiliency or the perseverance or whatever you want to call it led us to the beginning of this year. And we were doing fine. We were still pretty small. I mean, I think we had maybe 7 employees about February or March, which was great. A couple vehicles, all that kind of stuff. Well, in March, we know pandemic began. And when that began, it wasn't just about eating local food. At that point, it just became about, can I get food? And people were putting orders in at any of the big box stores, and they would say, well, we have it, but we can't, you're 2 weeks out on our waiting list to get the food. So then people start, you know, being on the 17th page of Google at that point, doesn't really matter. If you've got food, you got food. And we did, because we planned, you know, and had it and had it forecast, and we were able to meet that need. And when we did, this year, it just took off. I mean, we grew by a couple 100%, and bought more trucks and got more drivers and bought, you know, brought more people in internally and put more coolers up and just in a frantic. I mean, I can't even believe we made it. We had a meeting this morning as a team, and I said, I don't even remember any of it. I just look out now and I see that we've got, you know, 10 times the customers we had and 10 times the employees we had. And we've got to figure out this winter how to prepare now to be a you know, multi-million dollar company versus just, you know, wherever we were at before, which was, you know, how can we get people to know about us? And so that's kind of brought us to present day. And now we're trying to figure out those things and think, okay, we prepared, you know, I always said it was going to be a drought or some natural disaster. You know, we're preparing for when California has 2 or 3 years in a row of drought and we can't get lettuce from California anymore. And if you don't know somebody who's growing it, then you don't get lettuce unless you got $100 for a head of lettuce or whatever. So in doing that, it ended up being a pandemic that created a demand, not a natural disaster, but doesn't really matter. Either way, we saw the writing on the wall a decade ago and built for and got out over our skis for what was ever what was going to happen. I don't know. Something was going to break. It was a house of cards. And so that's where we are now, where we're like, okay, we now have lots and lots of people who are awakening. The pandemic has caused an awakening in so many people for so many things, not just food, but you know, it matters, and where it's coming from and how the earth is being treated and all the hidden costs that go into cheap food and, you know, including your healthcare, et cetera. So, you know, there's just so many areas that we try to talk about with our customers. We don't hit them all because ultimately at the end of the day, we still have to come back and say, hey, check out this new product we've got this week. And you know, it's hard to demand that much attention, but we also try to educate on all of these systems that are in play. You know, we've said it from the beginning, the pandemic didn't break the food system. It was broken before. It just exposed all of those things to people who wouldn't normally see it because the meatpacking industry was affected and the shortage on flour and yeast was affected and whatever. And it's like, there's all these broken pieces, all these different places, and nobody really knows why. And so I don't want to be an expose where I'm just trying to, you know, pull the wool off of everybody's eyes all the time. But you have to do some of that to even bring people to the point where, hey, this is why this is like this, but it doesn't have to be like this. And so what we're trying to do then is fix or even reimagine what a food system could look like. And when we reimagine it, it ends up usually looking a lot like it looked about 60 years ago and prior, which was our grandma and great grandma's food system, which was grow it if you can grow it yourself. If you can't, grow what you can grow and then use that to trade for the things you can't grow. And then beyond that, then it becomes a regional thing, you know, where you've got things that you are unable to grow in your region and you can get them from other places. And what do you have in your region to kind of trade for that? All while thinking about how are you treating yourself to begin with, trickling back to the soil. Listen, if you're treating the soil right, it'll all trickle back up through the food to the animal, to the person, or whatever it might be. But it starts somewhere, and you can't categorize it all and think that if you divorce the systems from each other, that if you're treating the soil wrong, that your gut's not going to suffer because of it. It looks like the same product. I've got a head of lettuce here that was grown, you know, using chemicals and fertilizers and all kinds of things that shouldn't have been used. I've got a head of lettuce here that looks about the same, but inside of that thing, tracing all the way back to the biome that was in the soil, it makes a giant difference on humanity, not to mention the earth, but, you know, on the other end. And you know, all of those things, you can't look at it all and think, well, I wonder why the planet's heating up. You know, well, let's look and see. And it turns out that our agricultural practices are not great and that it's destroying all these other things that contribute to that. And that, you know, it's not a matter of we've got too much carbon. It's the same amount of carbon roughly that we've always had. It's just in the wrong place. It's in the air and it needs to be in the soil. Well, how do you get it into the soil? Plants. Well, why, you know, so on and on and on. These are all things that, I mean, you know, I'm not, at the end of the day, I'm still selling broccoli. That's the product. I've got to sell broccoli for $2 and try to be able to get it to you for $1.50 so that 50 cents can keep the lights on and put fuel in the cars. But in the meantime, so many other things are affected. And that's where we're trying to look at each of those things and try to marry them all back together and teach our members and our followers how to do it. Because I think it's going to, in the 200 year scheme, might actually save us from an extinction. We may be too far gone. I don't know, but I'm going to hold out hope that we can turn it around.
Amen. I love what you said about, you know, for me, 2020 was an awakening, whether people liked it or not, on every single level, that systems were not working either inside yourself. For me, I had a lot of like, what am I rushing to? right? Yeah. Slowing down, paying attention, dealing with stuff that, you know, I didn't want to deal with, but I did. Yeah. And I'm still here. And the same thing with food. I think people are also seeing it with the government. No matter what you think about it, things are happening. Yes. And people are like, what the F?
Yes, but of course.
For me, I hold that vision too for humanity. I think, you know, there's an extinction or an evolution that we have a choice. Yeah. And that's a choice we can make every single day from the food that we eat, from the thoughts that we think, you know, to what we put out into the world. Like you and your wife started this beautiful passion project for your family that grew. And I truly believe, you know, the next step in humanity is people actually following what they're passionate about. And, you know, whether it's creating a business or just helping other people, that's that next evolution when we're led by our hearts and not necessarily our pocketbooks. You know, I want to be an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer because I want to have money, but you're trading all of that time, whether it's schooling and the money for schooling and, you know, to do something that you hate for 30 years just so you can, you know, retire. And we can probably go on and on and on about that. But it's just this choice that we have to make. And it starts with food.
Yeah. For me, I always thought of it like this in the beginning of when I started thinking about what I wanted my life to be like. I was, you know, maybe late 20s. And I started to think, you know, I just observing, you know, that people are going to a job that they don't like so that they can have some evening hours to themselves and a weekend and maybe a couple of vacations a year. And I thought, I'm not living for 20% of my life when most of that time is spent sleeping or getting an oil change, you know? And so it's like, as we build out what we build out, Sarah and I mean, we have four kids now, we homeschool, we've always have. I mean, you can ask any, I've been in with the decision makers at Ohio Health, a multi-billion dollar company, and I'm in the meeting and my kid's with me. I'm there for Yellowbird trying to get them to get it to their, you know, nurses and doctors and people that are working in those buildings. And I've got a sixth grader doing his math beside me and I'm in a boardroom with the decision makers. That's how I wanted to live my life and raise my kids and let them see, you know, we're not raising our kids to go to college necessarily. Every one of my kids knows if you want to go to school, you can go to school. You can take that debt on if you want, but you're going to know going in beforehand what you're taking on. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, you can be anything. I don't care what you do. If you want to be an electrician, that's what you know, you're going to pursue that. And I'm going to give you every leg up to go do that thing. What it could be anything. Mm-hmm. And so don't lock yourself into, this is the plan. This is the whatever. You know, when I left college when I was in the middle of my junior year and I moved out to Montana and I lived in Montana with a couple of brothers that were homeschooled and their whole life. And, one of the kids had never seen the inside of a classroom. He'd never taken a test. He'd never, whatever. And in to most of the world, he would have been the, you know, weirdest, most backward, whatever. But this kid at 18 had made and lost more money than I'll ever make. Just because he had no restriction on his brain that said you can or can't do this thing. He just thought anything I want to do, I can do, and I'm going to go do it. And he would go do it. You know, imagine the freedom of never having that ranking system or that anything that the public school creates, which, listen, I love teachers. All my in-laws are teachers. There's lots of great things going on in the public school system. But for us, we thought we're going to try something different and try to create a different outcome. I can tell you what the outcome is, a generation of what that system will push out. We're living in it. I can look around and see it all. We'd be foolish to think that that isn't a result of that in schooling, in healthcare, in our entertainment, in all those different things. We're living in the result of what we've sown over the last 10, 20, 30 years. So that's where we've tried to relook at it all and just say, what are we going to do as a family? And what are we going to live by? And what are our values going to be? And when we did that, it's not like we had like family meetings about it every day and set an agenda out and strove for goals. We really kind of just said, let's just keep watching and listening. And when we did, we realized we spend a heck of a lot of time preparing food. We're in the kitchen all the time. If you want a meal at 6 o'clock, you can't start the meal at 5:55. That meal starts at 5 or at 4, or maybe the day before when you're preparing something that needs to sit or brine or ferment or whatever. And so as we looked at all that, it's like, how are people expected to eat well when we all live in this hurry up society, hurry up and wait society? And you made a good point about the pandemic where at some point, you know, you were faced with, I can no longer run from myself.
Yep.
I can't pacify. I can't go to the gym, which is what I normally would do. I can't go to the movies. I can't go out to eat every meal. I can't, all these different things. And so you're sitting there and you got nowhere to run from yourself. It's just you. You're with yourself 24/7. And so as we did that as a society, I think there's been, of course, there's going to be a lot of struggle in that. We don't want to, it's the hardest person to look at. It's the last person I want to look at is myself. And so as we've examined that though, if you're able to live in the tension and sit in the tension, and then really at that point, have the courage to make the decision that you know needs to be made. When you're led with your heart, you know what the right decision is. I tell people that all the time. You're asking me something or you're telling me a story that you already know in your gut what the answer is. You just want either me to justify the decision you're making or to be the person to tell you to make the other decision. It's really hard to make that decision yourself, even if you know what the right choice is for some reason. It's like our wiring or whatever. And so, you know, that's where I'm just looking at, okay, and I tell my kids all the time, usually when you're looking at your decisions, the harder decision is the right decision in that moment. It's not always that way, but a lot of times it is. And you can take a shortcut. You can take the easy route. You can do a half-assed job. You fill in the litany of things, or the thing that would take longer is harder. If there's resistance in my brain, I automatically almost always do it just because I know that, well, there's a I'm walking past a piece of a can in the parking lot of, you know, the game store I'm about ready to go into. Everyone else has also walked past that can. It's why it's still laying there. What if I bent over and picked it up and took it to the trash can rather than walk by it? That's a small example of a giant issue that we all are faced with, which is, what are we going to take care of? And who are we going to take care of? And what are we going to take pride in? And what are we going to pursue? And I think that this thing is like birthing pains, this pandemic, this time inside, this, you know, where you're stuck doing these different things. No matter what you think about the virus or the pandemic or any of that, we all are kind of like subjugated to an invisible set of rules that we can't violate anymore. I wear a scarf. I mean, I kind of wear a scarf always, but like, for now, for different reasons, that I can put it up over my nose. Do I think that's the best thing? It doesn't even matter. I need to do it because societally, or whatever that word would be, is we're doing it to try to protect something, right? And to try to be like, even if it's protecting our grandparents or even if it's for peace of mind for them, I'm willing to do it. Is this what's required of me? That little, I don't feel like you're taking my rights because we're, you know, we don't really know what's going on and it might be a layer of protection. All that is just caring for somebody else and letting my ego dissolve and what I think is the best thing in my opinion and my view of what the truth is or whatever those things are and saying, what if I can still hold all that and still have things that drive me, but I can look to, you know, my neighbor and think about somebody else over myself, my family, my kids, whatever that might be. Specifically in this instance, it's food. And it all comes back to who's getting paid for this? Who's getting paid to grow this food? The people that are getting paid to grow it, if they're growing it right, so that all of the things in me work correctly, mind, heart, spirit, soul, gut, communal things with people that are in my life and all the people that work for me and with me, blah, 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 all that stuff. It's all starting with that head of lettuce that came out of the ground and what was done to that ground to make that head of lettuce so that all of this is functioning right. Are they getting any money? Are the people that are doing that receiving anything? Or are they beholden to a system that requires them to go stand at a farmer's market because that's the only outlet for them? Or go to a restaurant that now can't even buy their stuff because they're not even open enough to make it worth buying? All these questions need to be asked. That's why we continue to just say, who grew your food? It's just the easiest way to start the conversation, because it all then points back to everything that I've talked about to the, I mean, you know, there is nothing, I tell people all the time, I could sell $10 billion of food out the front end of our company, and that is fine and fun and exciting. But the buzz for me is when we roll up in our truck to the person that's growing the food, and I literally whip the checkbook out and I'm like, what do you need? And they say, well, I really need to get, you know, $6 a pound for this spinach. And they say it begrudgingly, almost like, I know I've gotten beat up so many times and I've got my hands smacked so many times at that price, you know, that anytime I've tried to sell it, you know, people whine or complain or whatever. And it's like $6 a pound. Does that keep the lights on? Okay, let's go. $6. You know, how many pounds did you sell me? 400. What is that? $2,400. So did it rip the check out and hand it to them. It's like, listen, you're the freaking rock star. You're the doctor. You're the first line doctor. And so, you know, you should be paid the same as anybody who's standing in the hospital that's doing what they're doing, for Pete's sake. And so until we reconcile those systems and those awarenesses and those things all together to play all together, we're going to continue to have a diseased society. What we're doing, or what, you know, even you and I specifically could even say this, is we're raising up and participating with a band, a community of people who are all waking up together. And all we're doing is giving them a platform or a voice or a place to get the thing that they need. If they need inspiration for something that you've got a podcast or you're interviewing somebody and they can hear that and it's the thing. I mean, how many times have we listened to somebody on a podcast and been like, yeah, I love it, I'm in, right? Or they need a product. Listen, I want to eat better. Where can I find this lettuce that you're talking about? Well, it's not on the grocery store shelves. There's lettuce there, but it's not the same. And so let me give you, of course, go to your farmers markets. Of course, go direct to the farm if you can. I am all for those things. But the farmer, the grower, 9 times out of 10 can't make it on just that. So what if we created, I call it the sales monster. What if we created this giant group of people that were putting their money where their mouth is and where their heart is, and they were paying the grower for the product that we're bringing to them. And in doing that, of course they're getting nourished and their awareness, like, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think the waking up is separated from the lettuce head. You know, what is in that lettuce and how that is cultivated and grown and the things that are in there that are seen and unseen are affecting the person that's eating it. But it's not that everybody can go to those places and, you know, and it's not, you can't get out to the farm, you can't get to the farmer's market or whatever it might be. So let's create this giant sales monster. And am I selling at the end of the day? Yes. And sometimes I make that even blatantly obvious, like, hey, everybody that this email's hitting, of course I'm selling you a product. I need you to buy this, but let me talk about it. Let me tell you why it's so great. Let me whatever. Like, at the end of the day, I want you to know that all you're doing with that dollar every day is just voting. Yes, yes, yes. I'm for this. I'm for this. I'm for this. Listen, everything's going to happen in Washington as it happens. There's going to be elections. I'm not saying don't vote. I'm not saying that the midterms aren't important. I'm not saying that people that hold the Senate aren't whatever. That system, though, is going to go on, and it doesn't really care what I have to say. And so it's built to perpetuate what has always been. I am here to disrupt that and to bring up a pirate flag underneath of it and say, I'm going to build a community that is resilient to no matter what you're afraid of, no matter what the headline says, the Smithfield plant is shut down because too many people had COVID and you can't get your bacon, you can't whatever. I never ran out of bacon because I know the person who's raising the hog that is doing the thing that has the whatever, and our customers are willing to pay for that product because it's not coming from those places and all the inherent bad things that are happening there. We've created a whole system that is underneath of and somewhat invisible to, luckily, we're not on it, really on anybody's radar because we're not disrupting the Amazons of the world. But, you know, that is, I'm not saying I'm here for 1 billion people. That's not my audience. I'm saying I'm here for 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people that are done with one thing and ready to do another thing, and all they really need is the tools to do it. You're going to make your own decisions of what you eat, what you do physically, spiritually, whatever. I can hand you a box full of tools that will make this one little area of what you're trying to do in your transformation, in your evolution possible. And that's what we're doing. Because I know if I can do that, your spirituality is going to come into line quicker and easier. Your physical is going to come into line quicker and easier. Your relationships with your spouse or with your kids or with your friends, or your coworkers, all that is going to, because you're working on it all, going to take care of itself. All I'm doing is giving you this little box for this little area that hopefully will then affect all the other areas.
Amen. One thing that came up for me when you were talking about all of that is we say it in our house all the time. The way you do one thing is the way you do everything.
Yep.
So picking up that can, buying food that's locally grown, you know, yep. Meditating, being yep. with yourself, working on your relationship. It's huge. Yep. And I know some people, you know, might be thinking, all right, what does this box look like? You know, this is all yeah. great. Sign me up. How, what do I get every week? So I know you guys are really, really good about sending, you know, communication about yeah. what's in your box, recipes. So you don't like, it's like really all provided for you in this box. So you talk yeah. about like, if you signed up for a weekly food share, what you would get and how sure. you guys distribute.
So in the beginning, you know, this concept's been around for a long time, which is I'm going to pay a dollar amount for a share of whatever you're giving out. It's like a, you know, cigar of the month club. What are the cigars this month? What's the wine this month? Whatever it is, you're paying a certain amount and you're getting something in return. For us, we tried to remove all the hurdles. It used to be you paid one giant amount in the beginning of the year, $1,000 gets you 20 weeks worth of deliveries. Well, what if you're traveling? What if you don't want that much food? What if you don't like something? These are all hurdles to participating. We just tried to remove all the hurdles. We went in and we said, now you can just pay by the week, just like you pay your Amazon or your Netflix account. You can pay, you know, you can choose what you want. You can put boxes on hold if you're traveling or you only want a box every other week. You can choose one of our three different sizes. You're a single person that doesn't want 17 varieties of veggies each week because you couldn't possibly eat that many. Whatever it might be, we've tried to remove all those hurdles. Ultimately, what we've created over 7 years is an online grocery store. We still stick to the fact that our core, you know, 85 to 90% of our customers still get our weekly subscription box. And I'll talk about that in a second. But we've got a whole nother contingency of people who, you know, we're trying to put all these veggies and fruit onto our online store a la carte so that if you are not a person who likes surprises, which we just can't get around, that's just the way seasonal food is, you can go in and say, you know what, I want sweet potatoes, I want lettuce, I want whatever. But then we've added 1,000+ grocery items. So I also want Dorista dips and North Country charcuterie and Bunker Hill cheese and whatever it might be to fill out my shop, you know, my grocery cart. And, you know, pasture raised meat and eggs. And we've got wild caught Alaskan salmon. I mean, literally the lady and husband that do it, they're the only two on the boat. That you can't get more direct to the salmon than that. You know, that kind of stuff. And we vetted all these places in food. I always say selfishly, I just do it for myself because I want the food. If everybody else benefits from it, then fine. But, you know, that's the shopping experience. Now, the box itself, which is our core product, we've got, you know, three sizes. We've got a mini, a base, and a full. That's $25, $35, or $45 every time you get it. That could be every week. That could be every other week. That could be once a month. That could be once. Hey, I'm hard up for food. I want to try this one time. I'm, you know, coming up with all these different things I hear. You can get it one time and never get it again. Don't do that, though. Just get it and continue to get it. But those are what is in season. So we are almost in January and this is the biggest question is what's January? What are you going to give me? Well, we have, first of all, partnered with and bought, pre-bought potatoes, thousands of pounds, potatoes, sweet potatoes, multiple kinds of squash, onions, garlic, all the roots, carrots, beets, rutabagas, turnips, parsnips, all those different things. Then, and those are in like storage. So like literally we created grandma's cellar that you could store root vegetables in about five different climate controlled zones in this warehouse that we're in. It's ridiculous to do it. It's all harebrained, but that's where our system is at. No one has done that, which it needs to be done. Listen, if you want local food in January, you better have bought it in October or it isn't there, you know, for the most part. So now we've got this where we went the first year, we went 16 weeks of delivery. We're going 50 weeks a year now of delivery. So we take Thanksgiving week off and Christmas week off, mostly just to rest. And then the rest of the time, you know, we're able then in the winter to partner with people who are doing indoors and hydroponically lettuce, brassicas like, spinach, chard, kale, all those cooking greens, Asian greens, all that kind of stuff. And we found a family last winter down in Florida that are like, they are like Yellowbird Farm perfect candidates. Their last name was the Thorpes, and they have a farm in Florida and a farm in New York, all third generation family owned. They run a truck back and forth between the two farms to be able to supply New York with all this citrus from Florida. It's incredible. Oranges, grapefruits, jackfruits, bananas, like plantains, all these different kinds of things, mangoes we had last year. So what we do is we jet over, meet them in Buffalo on their way to where they're going in New York, pick up a van full of it and bring it back to our members so that in the winter you can have organically grown Yellowbird approved farm citrus, you know, from Florida. So we've begun to kind of reach out and do things that we didn't do originally, but we get that all, we bring it in, whatever week we're on, we lay it out, we've got it on an assembly line, we've got our boxes coming through, we've got all of our workers out building them and putting in, they know that in the minis this week, they're going to put in these 7 items, in the bases are going to put these 11 items, in the fulls are going to put these 16 items. They build them all. Of course, we then go deliver them all. Home deliveries is a big piece of what we do now. And we also do parking lot pickups. So we're at the same 8 parking lots every week in Columbus, same time, same place. And you can come up and pick your box up. You tell us your name. We got somebody down there that puts it on the pad. The guy in the truck, you know, hands it out. Of course, everybody's masked and gloved. You put the box down. They can pick it up. We'll put it in your car if you want, whatever the case might be. And then you get a newsletter. Now, this is the linchpin to the whole thing. The newsletter is me in the beginning. I've got a artistic expression that needs to come out, and it's usually in the form of writing, something snarky, something anecdotal, something about the food, the farm, some story about the week, whatever it might be. I lead with that. And then we've got a picture, a list of every single thing that's in the box. Now, that might be 30 things a week and you only got 8 of them. It's not like you got all 30. It's just that that's what we had available. And then that got sent out in the different sizes. So, you know, then when you pick up a rutabaga out of your mini box and you're looking at it and you've never seen it before, and it looks like a dinosaur egg. And you're like, I'm not sure that they meant to put that in there. First of all, we may not have meant to put that in there. That could always happen. But it is a rutabaga, and you'll know that because you'll look at the picture in the newsletter that's got a picture of a rutabaga. You'll connect the two. Underneath of it, it'll say, here's how you store it. Here's how you prep it. Here's a few links to recipes. Do you want to try to saute it? Do you want to try to roast it? Do you want to try to use it as a paperweight? Whatever you want to do with it, there's a link to help you to get to that. We choose the product. At the end of the day, if you're getting a subscription box, you are getting a box that, unless you've read the newsletter beforehand, you're opening up and it is a surprise. What ends up happening, though, is that over time, in the seasons, you begin to get a feel for what local food in your region actually looks, smells, tastes, and feels like. In France or in Italy, they call that terroir, I believe is how you pronounce it. But they've been doing it for 800 years. It's like this wine that's aged for this long, you can pick up this flavor of whatever is in it, oak, and that's from the soil because there was a rainy season in 1932 and it did this, like That's what it means to know where you're from. That's what it means, you know, when you're participating in your environment. And they're able to do that because they're an old country. I mean, they've been around for, you know, however long, and they've been aging their balsamic vinegar for eight generations. You know, we're a fairly young country. But what I don't want us to do is get so divorced from what real food locally actually means that we don't know that the reason that we don't have asparagus in January is because asparagus in Ohio is only available for about 6 to 8 weeks from the end of March to the beginning of May. And that if you're not eating it in that time period, if it's on your plate at a restaurant, that is from somewhere else, or it's been stored somehow for a lot, you know, it's old. I eat asparagus out of season at times, very rarely, but occasionally if I get a piece of salmon somewhere and it comes with that, you know, whatever, but I know that. And I think knowing is the beginning of all this. If I know that what I'm eating is doing something to myself, to the soil, to the healthcare system, to whatever it might be, if I know that when I'm spending this dollar on this t-shirt that is made and been proven that it's children in Malaysia, and that's not good, I can't just keep paying that dollar to that and wearing that and not thinking that I'm complicit in that whole system. And so the more we can begin to teach our customers, and I try to do it less, like I said, not in an expose way, sometimes you have to, but more in a, hey, here's the attributes of this, and maybe start to notice that when you eat sweet potatoes in January, it's fighting off sicknesses that might happen in January normally. Flus, it might be fighting off seasonal depression. There just might be stuff that's in that food that is grown at that time of year only, that's available at this specific thing because there's a design somewhere that's been around for a billion years that is, we have taken over and pretended like we're the designer. You know, if you're a believer in God, that there's a God force behind this. Well, we've basically said, nah, we're going to do it the way we want to do it. We're going to become that force because it's cheaper, faster, easier, whatever. Well, at what cost? Fossil fuels, the earth, your own body, you know, the disease that we have, again, that's on, you know, off the charts from where it was 60 years ago. And all the different facets of autism and diabetes and heart disease and whatever, all that stuff is exploding, and we know it and we can categorize it, but we don't ever just look backwards and think, well, we're a product of what we did at some point along the way. This is an outcome that we sowed 10, 20, 50 years ago. What did we do at these different times? Well, we started agriculture this way. We started adding in glyphosate at some point. We started doing all these different things. And we're in the result of that now. So all that to say, that weekly box that comes, when I walk past our line or I'm working on our line and putting food in those boxes, and I got every one of my coworkers beside me, I tell every one of them, this is that customer. Listen, we're building 1,000, 2,000 of these a week, but every one of these customers is only getting one of these boxes. So when they open that box up, it better be unique. It better be perfectly packed. It better be perfect condition if possible. All these different things, because that's their medicine. That is their gut fuel. That is their mental state for the rest of the week. That is whatever. And so the person on the end that closes the box, you can ask any one of them. I say, what's the last thing to go in every box? And they're like, I say it's love, because when the customer opens the box, the first thing that's going to hit them in the face is going to be whatever energy you put into it at the end of that line. And if you're on your 1,000th box and you're pissed off and you're cold and you're done and you're, when are we going home and I'm hungry and whatever, and it goes onto the palate, that person's box opens up with that juju in it. So you better put in more than when they open it up than what's in there that you can see with the veggies and the fruit and stuff. So that's what we're trying to send out, because ultimately, is it just a piece of broccoli? Absolutely. But is it just a piece of broccoli? No, absolutely not. It's both. And so when you think of things like that and you begin to, that's the experience we're trying to cultivate. And so that's the experience that we're hoping that the customer is having. They're getting a box of produce, small, medium, large. It costs a certain amount every week. It could be, you know, this, that, or the other. They could get it from the store if they wanted to. But ultimately, all of those things we're trying to encompass. And it's no wonder that I can't put our mission statement into, you know, any one little line or have an elevator pitch or what is it that you do or what is your company, you know, all those different things. It'd be easy to just say, well, we're a food company. We're a local food distribution company. That's the quick answer. But I could talk to you for another 2 hours about all the other things that we are hoping to accomplish. And some of it is invisible and some of it is, you know, things that are the bed that was made that we're laying in, and we're trying to unmake the bed and remake it so that the people that are in the carryover 10, 20, 30, 50 years ahead of us, my children, my grandchildren, are, you know, at least still have some platform of health that they can cultivate, and they're not, you know, just beyond what we can recover.
Wow. 10,000% agree. And what a great way to close up the show today. I looked at the clock and I go, holy crap, we got to close this up. But I just like, keep talking. Yes, I agree. Thank you, Benji, for coming on the show today. I think whether you are in Ohio or other places around the country or the world, this needs to be heard. I'm sure, you know, research other local food purveyors. I'm sure reach out to Benji. Yeah. I'm sure you have resources all over the country, you know. If you're interested in learning more. And of course, head over to Yellowbird's website as well. I think, you know, when you taste what's in season and what's grown locally versus a watered down, let's say, tomato that you get, you will notice that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
The food speaks for itself.
It speaks for itself. But thank you for coming to the show, and thank you for spending the time to educate us, but also to listen to your heart. Like you said, lead with that heart and create this beautiful movement for all of us. And I always close the show asking, how may we, the listeners, as an act of gratitude, be of service for you in return today?
Yes. I would say tonight when you sit down, or whatever, you know, whatever day this is heard, and you sit down and you look at your meal, just honor the meal by thinking about the individual components all the way down to what it was cooked in and where that, you know, that olive was grown somewhere. Yeah. And what was the journey that that olive went on to get to your plate? Was it honoring every step of the way, all the way back to the man or woman who grew and tended and picked hours and hours and hours and hours of work to get that olive to fruition, to be able to do what it's going to do the rest of the way out? Was that person honored? Was the plant honored? Was the ground honored? Was the distribution and the processing of that product to get to where it is? A lot of times when you eat in our current food system, the answer to that is either I don't know or no. It does not have to be. There are enough good growers around the world from everything from an olive that was grown in Italy that now is in olive oil that is on your table and you can know where it came from, all the way to, you know, the tomato that, and that may have been around the world, all the way to the tomato that you could have grown yourself in your backyard. And anyone who's ever grown a tomato will tell you it tastes better than any tomato they've ever had. And that is the ultimate awakening. And so begin to think about that. If you're asking that question, the answers that will be revealed to you, you are forced to make different decisions. And when you do, everything else begins to click too and awaken. And for me, it all starts with food. Now, the cool thing about that is that what that leads to is that you feel better about what you're eating. You physically feel better. And then all of a sudden, now you start to move more and your joints don't hurt and you begin to breathe better and you begin to have all these other experiences that you think are separate from that act of eating. But after you do it enough, you trace it all back to the soil that tree, that plant, that product was grown in. And then you realize when you start to convert and you start to know where more and more of that stuff's coming from, that you're connected to it all. I tell my kids when we sit down for dinner at night, you know, we say a prayer of gratitude. And I'm like, when you consume this bread, you are consuming the universe. What else could you be consuming? It's a little kernel of wheat that used the air and the water and the sun and the clouds and everything surrounding it to create, to manifest a physical plant that created this thing that gets ground and mixed with water and salt and yeast, and it grow. Like, that is the world that we live in. You are consuming the universe. It is inside of you. Honor that. That was what I would say.
Woo! What a good way to close that show. Thank you again so much, Benji, for coming on the show today. I enjoyed listening.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I love it.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.